It's the Currents Music News, the weekly podcast where we tell you what you need to know about what's going on in the music world. Today is Thursday, May 9th. I'm Jake Abler.
And I'm Jade, and we're going to have a conversation with a rock and roll mom coming up because it's Mother's Day weekend. We also have news stories and some music reviews on the way.
But first, let's hit a few of this week's music history highlights. 31 years ago this week, Prince released Love Sexy. One word, Love Sexy. It was his 10th studio album. It touched on spiritual themes, but it was carnal thoughts that kept it off some record store shelves. That nude photo of Prince, although very artfully posed, was a little too much for some stores, which actually wrapped the album in black. It was ironic, given that Prince had just pulled the planned release of his black album, an LP with an actual all-black cover. 51 years ago this week, Buffalo Springfield called it quits. Formed in 1966, the legendary Canadian-American rock band launched Neil Young and Stephen Stills into the popular eye, becoming known for singles like the iconic protest song For What It's Worth. They were maybe an odd fit as tourmates for the Beach Boys in 1968, but by May 5th of that year, they weren't even a good fit for each other. After one last show at the Long Beach Arena, the band members went their separate ways.
This week, back in 1988, Tom Waits sued Frito-Lay. Why? Because they were using somebody who sounded very much like him in their commercial to advertise some new chips. So in their big meeting, when they were coming up with how to advertise these chips, they played a little sample of Tom Waits' song, Step Right Up.
Step right up. Everyone's a winner, bargains galore. That's right, you two can be the proud owner. The quality goes in before the name goes on.
And they said, that sounds great. That's what we should do. That's how exactly we want this commercial to sound. And they ended up hiring a guy who used to work with Tom Waits, who had played as an impersonator of Tom Waits on tour as the actual voice in the commercial. And when Tom Waits heard it, when he was in a radio station doing an interview, he thought that it actually was him. And he said, maybe I did do this and I was just too drunk and didn't realize that I had recorded this commercial. But no, in fact, it was not his voice. And so he sued and ended up winning $2.6 million from Frito-Lay's for using the fake Tom Waits.
There's a new tortilla chip called Salsa Rio Doritos. It's buffo, bafo, bravo, gung-ho, tally-ho, but never mellow.
Tickle your taste from the tangy tomatoes, flavor peppers, oodles of onions and sassy spices. The new Salsa Rio Doritos.
Now that tongue tickle is quite a stickle. It's compound and resounded.
True story, when Roger McGuinn first heard Tom Petty's American Girl, he turned to his manager and said, when did I record that? Okay, here are a few of this week's music news headlines. Rolling Stone is launching new music charts to compete with Billboard as the go-to source for determining the country's most popular music. Just like Billboard, Rolling Stone will rank the top 100 songs and top 200 albums in the United States, plus offering other charts including ranks of social media buzz and trending tracks. New charts roll out this coming Monday. Billboard's long been considered the source of record regarding what music is most popular, but the streaming era has introduced a lot more information, a lot more uncertainty. Like, how much should a vinyl purchase count compared to a stream that you pay for, or a stream that you don't pay for, or a spin on the radio? Billboard just keeps tweaking its formula to account for changing types of music consumption, but it might be that there just is no such thing as a definitive list of music popularity anymore.
So, Jay, when you go to a music festival, what are you looking for?
Great music, fun in the sun, some grass, ideally. I mean, like the kind you like sit on, you put your blanket down, that kind of grass.
I got you.
Okay.
Maybe a significant other of some sort, a summertime fling. Well, if that's what you're looking for when you go to a music festival, Tinder is here to help you out. So they are now creating festival mode for your phone, for your app. So you can sort of almost set up like a pre-date before you go to the festival. You know you're going to Bonnaroo, set up festy mode, and all of a sudden, anybody else who also said, I'm going to this music festival, starts populating it. And you can go enjoy your music, enjoy, you know, your grass that you're sitting upon, but also have somebody with a warm and comforting smile right next to you.
I think that's like a low-pressure date or a high-pressure date.
I think it's low-pressure because if, worst-case scenario, you're like, oh, I have to dance, and then just dance away.
A new study of 1,500 independent musicians finds that less than a fifth of them think the music industry is working to improve mental health conditions. The need is significant. Multiple previous studies have found that musicians are especially vulnerable to mental health challenges, with 80% of young musicians reporting some form of mental health issue, and musicians in general experiencing depression at 3 times the rate of the general population. May is Mental Health Month, and that's been prompting more conversations about this issue in the music world and beyond. Artists including Shirley Manson, James Blake, and Passion Pit's Michael Angelikos have been opening up about the need for greater mental health supports in the music world, with Angelikos saying, it's like they've forgotten about the people that create their product. Another artist who's opening up is Common, whose new memoir, Let Love Have the Last Word, includes an account of an instance of childhood sexual abuse by a family friend. He writes that he'd pushed the memory away until a couple of years ago, and now he's sharing his story in hopes of assuring others they shouldn't feel ashamed about coming forth. In a recent interview, Common said, I'm telling what I feel in ways that I've dealt with it, and I want people to know that it's a safe place to talk about things you go through. If you or someone you know is experiencing mental health challenges, you can find resources via Minnesota Public Radio's mental health initiative, Call to Mind, at calltomindnow.org. Here's wishing Common, in the words of the opening track to his latest album, some joy and peace.
All praise to the all I seeing, supreme being, giver of joy and peace, love, supreme freedom. See him in the sun, see him in the daughters, the mountains, the waters, all divine order, the king unseen.
Let's check in on this week's new releases. We're going to start off with Jamila Woods, whose new album, Legacy, Legacy, highlights her love of her hometown Chicago and the historic figures that influenced her. Each song is named after a Black luminary: Sun Ra, Zora Neale Hurston, Octavia Butler, and Eartha Kitt. As she said to The Guardian, my inspirations gave me permission to speak up. The aim with my teaching is that it gives young people of Chicago the same opportunity. In Eartha, Woods reflects on relationships and things she won't put up with.
If you can have the indie cred to open for Slater Kinney and the mainstream appeal to get noticed by Entertainment Weekly, you're hitting the power pop sweet spot. That's right where Brooklyn quartet Charlie Bliss find themselves as they release their sophomore album, Young Enough. Frontwoman Eva Hendrix sings with the throaty passion of a riot girl and the cutting melodicism of a pop punk star. The album is about finding hope in a dark world, inspired both by an abusive personal relationship and by the abuse being suffered by society more broadly right now. Hendrix told Entertainment Weekly, I think it's also really important to remember that people are still people and to look at the world with some kind of wonder and hope for the future and that it could get better. It may be hard to believe, but that's how the song goes.
The yeehaw agenda continues, this time through California stoner rocker Mac DeMarco and his latest album, Here Comes the Cowboys. The songs have the trademark lackadaisical vocal delivery that Mac DeMarco is known for, and that downshifting instrument pitch that sounds like everything is slowly losing battery. One of the more dramatic offerings on the album is the piano-driven On the Square.
Brother's hands. This time it's in brother's hands.
As the New Yorker puts it, Mavis Staples maintains a peer approval rating roughly on par with Sunny Days and Ice Cream Cones. Staples, who turns 80 this July, has brought conviction and joy to everything she's done, from 1950s spirituals with the Staples Singers, to civil rights anthems of the 60s, to disco covers of Talking Head songs in the 80s, to a cavalcade of tributes and celebrations in the 21st century. This week, she drops a new solo album produced by Ben Harper. On We Get By, Staples is still calling for change. In a statement, she said, "These songs are delivering such a strong message. We truly need to make a change if we want this world to be better." Songs like Anytime celebrate Staples' history and heritage, including her association with classic Muscle Shoals soul.
I'm a fighter, I'm a lover. There is no other way. Could be one or the other on any given day. You can't fool me. And it ain't no needing you trying.
This Sunday is Mother's Day, and in honor of the occasion, I talked with maybe the most famous rock star mom out there, Virginia Hamlin Grohl, mother of Dave Grohl of Nirvana and Foo Fighters. She's the author of the fascinating book From Cradle to Stage, in which she profiles other moms of famous musicians. We talked about what she's learned over the course of the project. Well, so, talking about your book, which I've really enjoyed, From Cradle to Stage, you've written and talked about the origins of that project. You didn't just set out to write a book about your own experiences, but you actively sought out other music star moms.
Yeah, I was very curious about, first of all, where they were, why they weren't enjoying it like I was. And then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, they're women like me, probably, and I just wanted to meet them, find out about them. So it was a joyous experience. It was really wonderful to meet people, and we bonded instantly because we had this unusual thing in common. And so, it was a great journey. I really enjoyed it.
So what surprised you about the various moms you met and spoke with?
Well, their life stories and histories were drastically different, as you noted from reading the book. And their ages vary greatly, too. Some of them are in their 90s now. And, you know, the history that they've lived through is profound and has had great effects on their music, from apartheid in South Africa to living in a Nazi prison camp. And then others just growing up in military families and so on. So many different experiences. But then when it came to the raising of the musician, that's when we had everything in common, when they became mad about music and when they were insistent that that was all they wanted to do and how they would drop out of school. And all our stories were pretty much the same in those categories.
Yeah, so it's not an easy moment necessarily for any family. For some families, it was tougher than others, it sounds like.
Definitely, yeah. Getty Lee's mom had come to a country where she didn't speak the language, didn't have a job, had no money, and invested her entire being into providing more for her children. There were three of them. And education was a huge part of that. So her disappointment was shattering. Others of us accepted more quickly and more easily. When David started, he started in little tiny punk clubs with, I don't know, maybe 20 to 50 people in them, all crowded in and moving really fast. And then as his bands changed and as his fame changed, he went from smaller to larger to larger to larger. Now I think they just get dropped into the arena right away. And that's very different too.
Among the hard moments, there's immensely proud moments as well. Clearly you've had your share. What are some of either your favorite moments as a rock mom or some of the favorite moments that the moms you talked to told you about where they were just so suffused with pride?
David worked with a group of children in the Los Angeles area who had lots of issues that kept them from performing regular daily chores and schoolwork. And someone suggested that they try to use music therapy. And somebody's idea was to call him in and have them engage in creating a band and creating some music together. And they worked together for quite a period of time. And then they had a recital, and they performed in front of a fairly large audience in a nice venue. And seeing them perform, that was a moment that really, I'm still overwhelmed by the thought of how joyous they were. It was life-changing. It was really amazing.
You did talk with many women who've raised kids who are obviously very successful at what they do, but they seem to be happy for the most part, too, and that's probably all that any parent could really hope for.
Yeah, and I did get turned down by some people that I reached out to. And so those might have been the stories that weren't so happy. I'm guessing that, most of the people that said yes, some of them had to be talked into it, were stories that turned out to be good, happy, and all of them that I asked were successful. And so the ones that turned me down, I don't know. I'm sure there are many other versions of this story out there that aren't quite so happy, but that's how that works, I guess.
Yeah. One more question. I will look forward to the documentary hitting screens when that happens. But more immediately, we have Mother's Day coming up. Do you have any Mother's Day rituals or plans to celebrate this year?
You know, it's been different every year. I've spent Mother's Days different places of the world and in different cities in this country. And I don't know what the plan is this year, actually. I'm doing some traveling in the next couple months, but I better get on that. I better find out.
What could be more rock and roll than that?
That's right.
Well, thank you again for your time.
Nice talking with you, Jay.
So, Jade, did you notice that this week was the Met Gala? Did you hear any buzz or mention of that anywhere on social media?
No, I didn't see any. Of course I did, Jay, because it's everywhere.
Everyone wants to talk about the Met Gala. Mm-hmm. Look at the people arriving for the Met Gala.
I mean, the theme was camp. So, of course, it's going to be over the top. It's going to be ridiculous. It's going to be fun.
And I feel like the Met Gala wasn't necessarily something that the music world had to pay a lot of attention to until about half a decade ago when there was the infamous elevator incident with Jay-Z, Solange, and Beyoncé. That later was referenced on Beyoncé's Flawless remix. Now all the music fans are out there waiting for the next iconic moment at the Met Gala.
Well, and it's also kind of, shocking for me that Rihanna wasn't there this year. I feel like the Met Gala is typically where Rihanna shines, but there were a couple of musicians who were kind of there to steal the show. I think Lady Gaga definitely stole the show with multiple costume changes.
Cardi B kind of looking like a volcano.
Kacey Musgraves dressed up as Barbie, which was very spot on.
Katy Perry was in a chandelier. Solange was in snakeskin. Celine Dion sort of channeled Cher, I thought, kind of doing her version of a Bob Mackie. And then, of course, Cher was there to sing ABBA. So it was all getting pretty campy, but I think the winner probably was Lizzo.
She was doing this Shirley MacLaine look, and she had this beautiful hair, hot pink, and she had this gorgeous coat.
I wonder if all the spirits now have stopped talking to Shirley MacLaine because they just want to talk to Lizzo instead.
I mean, who doesn't? This is Lizzo's year. It's 2019. Everything is all Lizzo all the time, so I'm not surprised she had one of the best looks at the Met Gala.
And she liked it so much that in this week's viral clip, she actually wore that amazing jacket to the airport the next day.
And it kind of looked like she was just wearing it over her pajamas, which makes me love and appreciate it even more. But I think my favorite part of the clip is when she pauses next to a sign that says upper class, and she's holding a teddy bear. Her sunglasses are on, and the teddy bear is wearing this little like sleep mask that just says privacy, please.
I've only flown first class once in my life, but I felt like that in my heart. And unbelievably, just one day earlier, she was actually here at The Current to do an acoustic session. She wore giant earrings bearing her name, not quite at Met Gala level, but still looking fantastic and sounding, if it's possible, even better. Here's her acoustic version of Juice from that session.
Mirror, mirror on the wall, don't say it cause I know I'm cute. Do it down to my drawers, they'll be all on my shoe. I be dripping summer sauce, gotta be looking like Prego. Little like a crystal ball, that's cool, baby, so is you. That's how I roll if I'm shining.
And that's a wrap for this week. Thanks to our guest, Virginia Hamlin Grohl, for talking all about being a rock mom. I'm Jay Gabler.
And I'm Jade.
Our producer this week is Anna Wiggle. If you're enjoying the podcast, please let your friends know we are coming out once a week with big, jumbo, supersized episodes of the Current Music News Podcast. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week with more music news headlines, viral clips, new releases, and more.
Blame it on my juice. No, I'm not a snack at all. Look, baby, I'm the holler.